Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here. Welcome back to Tesla Daily. Happy Tuesday. We're starting off the week here as yesterday was President's Day, and we've got a lot to go through. We've got responses from both the SEC and Tesla again on some of the issues that Tesla has raised last week. Tesla making some even more significant claims now. We've got a couple of updates on Berlin, Fremont as well, news on Tesla software, a few updates on Model Y, Tesla Energy, and a couple other things as well. I don't have a whole lot to say on the markets today. Tesla down 4.1% on the day to close at $821.53. The NASDAQ down 1.2%. Obviously, the macro situation is predominant right now as we wait and see what's going to transpire with Russia, Ukraine. President Biden today announcing sanctions on Russia. We'll see how much further this goes. I don't really have any particular insight here, but any uncertainty is going to weigh heavier on stocks with high multiples. Inherently, those stocks are going to be based on higher levels of future growth. Generally, that comes with an escalated level of uncertainty and escalated level of risk. When you add macro uncertainty on top of that, it just kind of compounds in an environment of high risk aversion. Now, eventually that will flip back around. And for Tesla specifically, that will couple with a lot more certainty on future earnings as each quarterly earnings report comes in, as Tesla makes more progress on some things that, to be fair, maybe are a little bit behind what could have been expected, thinking of things like the Model X production ramp up, and certainly Giga Berlin and Giga Texas. So it'll work out. Tesla will get there. You got to be patient in the market. You got to be careful in the market. A few better examples of that than Tesla from, 2014 to 2019. If you're right and you're patient, it'll pay off. All right, let's get into this SEC stuff. This is a continuation of what we talked about on last Thursday's episode, where Tesla had complained to the court that the SEC still had not distributed $40 million that it had collected as a part of the settlement agreement back in 2018, and that Tesla felt that the SEC had generally been unfairly targeting them. So first, we've got the SEC's response to those claims, and then we have a follow-up from Tesla that makes things even a little bit more interesting. So starting off with that $40 million, the SEC says that their staff has been working closely with the distribution agent and the Commission's Division of Economic and Risk Analysis to develop a methodology to compensate investors who were harmed by the misconduct alleged in the Commission's complaints against Tesla and Mr. Musk. They say that given the complexity of the distribution, it's taken time to develop that plan of allocation, but coincidentally, it is nearing completion, and barring any unforeseen circumstances, they expect to submit a proposed plan by the end of March. I don't know. If investors were harmed as clearly as the SEC alleged, would it really take 3 years to figure out which of them were harmed and by how much? And ultimately, is it really more fair for the SEC to withhold $40 million than spending 3 years to figure out perhaps a slightly more optimal distribution of those funds? If this is so complex that it did actually take 3 years, is that a good use of SEC resources? Three questions there, and I think the answer to all of them is, well, probably not. And this isn't even the distribution of the funds, this is the proposed plan for the distribution of funds. It's not like it's getting held up with other legal paperwork or something. There is not even a submitted plan yet. Don't worry though, because it is nearing completion. As for the other parts of the complaint, Tesla had said that they believed that as a part of the settlement, the SEC would have to kind of work through the court. The SEC says, however, the court did not order any such monitoring process by the court. To the contrary, the court encouraged the parties to make good faith efforts to meet and confer before raising issues with the courts about compliance to the settlement. The SEC says that that is what they have been doing. And then finally, they say that Tesla's letter, quote, incorrectly implies that the commission staff have issued subpoenas in this litigation. That simply is not true. The commission staff have not issued any subpoenas in this litigation, end quote. All right, well, as we had talked about, Tesla in their 10K filing said that on November 16th, the SEC had issued a subpoena seeking information on their governance processes. So I guess we're getting into a semantical argument here about what is actually a subpoena. Obviously, the SEC asked for information. Tesla felt as though that was a subpoena. I guess the SEC saying, nope, no, it wasn't. So that was the SEC's response to Tesla's original letter. And then yesterday we got a new letter again on Tesla's behalf from Alex Spiro to the same court. First, on that $40 million, Tesla says that though the SEC tried to wave away those concerns, they cannot deny and do not deny that they have yet to pay out that $40 million. They then move on to the subpoenas, saying that the commission's claim there that they have not issued any subpoenas is disingenuous at best. They note the subpoena from November of 2021, saying the SEC had specifically demanded documents relating to compliance or non-compliance with Tesla's disclosure controls and procedures, executive communications, external communications, etc., or even the final judgment in the SEC settlement case. They note that the SEC also issued a subpoena with similar demands to Elon. So I don't know, just kind of weird that the SEC is saying, no, we didn't. Again, it must just be a semantical difference. Anyway, after that, things even get quite a bit more interesting because Tesla has made some new claims here. So the letter reads, quote, but our concerns now go well beyond niceties of the commission's representations. It has become clearer and clearer that the commission is out to retaliate against my clients for exercising their First Amendment rights, most recently by criticizing the commission on the public docket and by petitioning this court for relief upon information and belief after I filed the February 17th, 2022 letter to this court regarding the commission's conduct. At least one member of the SEC staff responded by leaking certain information regarding its investigation. This leak is emblematic of the vindictive, improper conduct that occasioned my letter. The SEC is retaliating against Mr. Musk and Tesla without answering to the constraints of principle or law in doing so. End quote. Okay, that is a serious allegation. Tesla doesn't say what information they believe was leaked. They don't really seem to give much explanation of why they have that belief. But they note that they sent a letter to the SEC on Saturday respectfully requesting that specific SEC staff members preserve their records and devices. Tesla also says that they've reported the matter to the SEC Office of Inspector General and that Tesla now requests on-the-record assurance that the commission has not leaked investigative details in violation of its own rules and policies and is otherwise acting in accordance with the law. All right, well, Tesla's certainly pushing back hard on this. We'll see if anything does come of it. The Office of Inspector General, that is an independent office within the SEC that audits and investigates to make sure that everything is being handled properly. Upping the intrigue one more level, Elon today responded to a Teslarati article on this, saying, quote, "This is just peeling back the first layer of the corruption onion. Stay tuned, ... end quote. Certainly no doubt that we will stay tuned. I hope Tesla is right on their claims. If so, glad to see them sticking up for themselves. But at the same time, that does create a bit of an overhang for investors from a very basic level, obviously generates a lot more articles about the SEC and Tesla. Investors don't really love to see that. And then a little bit more subliminally, obviously if Tesla is pushing back, it could bring them under even greater regulatory scrutiny and higher risk of retaliation, whether that be legal or not. All right, next up, we've got a couple of things on Berlin. I don't even really say updates here because one of the things that we have is a report from Bloomberg, got some attention today, talking about this water supply issue for Giga Berlin. We've talked about this so many times. For some reason, Bloomberg deciding to cover it today with the headline of Elon Musk laughed at the idea of Tesla using too much water. Now it's a real problem. They say at close to the top of the article that, quote, 6 months later, water is one of the primary reasons the plant still isn't producing vehicles, end quote. No, that is not correct. We've talked about this. The current water supply is enough for Tesla. The challenge in the courts would have the potential to overturn approval that Tesla has to have enough water supply. So they've got enough water supply that could change based on a court outcome. So it's not like there's no risk, but it's not a holdup currently, and that would require overturning something that has been approved. None of this has anything to do with the final approval that Tesla is waiting on to actually sell vehicles. So Bloomberg's report on this is not correct. Their own report shows that. They literally quote Jörg Steinbach saying that the current water supply is sufficient for the first stage of the factory. Once Tesla expands the site, he says, we'll need more. So terrible article by Bloomberg and no new information. Now, obviously Tesla is still waiting on that final approval, but we are still seeing some nice signs from Giga Berlin itself, at least. Tobias Lind drone flyover here. You can see a few hundred Model Y sitting outside of the factory. So Tesla definitely itching to get started there with full production. The other update that we have out of Germany is on Tesla Insurance. It looks like Welt is reporting that Tesla has now successfully registered Tesla Insurance Limited in Germany. And as part of those registration details, they talk about having an individual premium system, which rewards low risk driving with favorable premiums. Now, I would still expect it to be quite a while before Tesla actually launches the telematics based insurance product there. Sounded like next year at the earliest to me, based on Zach Kirkhorn's comments on the last earnings call, but always nice to see some of the steps along the way. Back over in the US, we've got a quick update on Model S production. It has been reported that Tesla has paused the Model S production line for an update to headlights, taillights, among other things. Shouldn't be anything too significant in terms of downtime, Elon noting that big changes may impact output for a day or two on Twitter, and that smaller changes usually affect production for less than an hour, and sometimes they're doing 20 of those in a single week. So hopefully not too impactful. And then Elon did also give an update on the status of some of the AAA gaming titles like Cyberpunk that Tesla showed off at the unveiling. He said that they're working through the general case of making Steam games work on a Tesla versus specific titles, since the former is obviously where they would want to be longer term. Not having a Model S or X, that delay obviously doesn't impact me, but I am glad to see that Tesla is taking that approach. Way, way more valuable to have that sort of flexibility longer term. Just a matter of the higher development costs and if that trade-off makes sense. And obviously Tesla has decided that it has. A couple of other interesting software-related updates here as we're on the topic. First, this is just an employee rumor. So Homar's blog sharing out a screenshot of a text message from an alleged Tesla employee. Obviously not the most ironclad rumor, so take it for what it's worth. First, on Cybertruck, it says that delivery should start in the first quarter of 2023 with crash/test vehicles being produced later this year. kind of aligns with the timeline we have thought about. Don't think that's anything really new. But then it also says that Tesla truly is taking this time, 2022, to absolutely crush everyone on software. We should see significant improvements in all possible software areas for all vehicles slash users. In addition, Tesla employees get FSD for free, and they are now launching a program starting in Austin where coworkers can get together to give other Tesla employees educational tips on FSD so that more of them opt into FSD beta for free. The internal push for level 4 autonomy this year is crazy. I don't think many outsiders understand what's coming. So that FSD beta stuff sounds a little bit weird. I think there's probably a layer of speculation in there added by this individual about them wanting to drive more users into opting into FSD beta for free. It might just be something as simple as Tesla saying, hey, if you have questions on FSD beta, you can connect with your coworker on that. So I wouldn't read into this too much overall, and then especially that piece, but I think it provides a little bit of an interesting perspective on internal communications, if accurate. And the other note on software, this one is really interesting. This was from comments made on the Aptiv earnings call. Aptiv is a technology supplier for automotive OEMs. Their CEO was asked a question kind of on their pricing power and their cost structure and how that's all developing, especially as more automotive OEMs are looking to do more of their software and technological development in-house. He responded saying, I think it's a great question because there's this increased narrative about OEMs doing more, but quote, the reality, I can tell you, there is virtually no OEM that we are launching programs that have a high software content level where OEMs are actually coming back to us and asking us to do more of the software development application activity than what was originally in the program, end quote. He expanded on that by saying that, again, understand that there's a lot of narrative out there about insourcing and vertically integrating, especially in areas like software, but, quote, I think a lot of that is driven by impression related to a West Coast-based battery electric vehicle company, but I would say with the exception of that automotive OEM, virtually all the OEMs that we're doing business with are struggling with software development, end quote. All right, very interesting there. So you can see he calls it a narrative, specifically a couple of times. Who is generating that narrative? Well, that's the automotive OEMs. You hear GM and others talk about how they're going to unlock all this great value from software, but just like a lot of the rest of their business, they're reliant on suppliers in this area. That's just what the automotive business has become over time. We've talked about this many times. Sandy Monroe definitely mentions this a lot. Other OEMs can talk about doing stuff like Tesla all they want. They can push that narrative all they want, but fundamentally, Tesla is just a different company. Don't fall for, even as Aptiv's CEO describes it, that narrative. All right, next we've got a couple of quick updates on the Model Y. First up, Tesla has now started deliveries of the Model Y in the UK, sharing out a couple of posts on that process on social media. Nice to see those right-hand drive vehicles, and congratulations to those new owners. Then we've also got some news here from Cars.com, which has selected the Model Y as their best electric vehicle for 2022. They, of course, share many superlatives on why they have selected the Model Y. I think we've all heard those, although they are nice to hear again. I think the most interesting part of this article is that Cars.com says that, quote, while EVs are still a fraction of overall vehicle purchases, about a third of active car shoppers are considering purchasing one. Though interest is rising, searches for EVs on Cars.com have nearly doubled over the last year. Inventory levels have dropped 30% since last year, end quote. So a nice little data point and nice to see that sharp increase. Obviously at 30% doesn't take too many more doublings to get up to the majority considering an EV. We've also got another data point here on strong demand for used Teslas, this time an article out of China. We had talked a few weeks ago about resellers in Europe being able to sell used vehicles above list prices. Sounds like we're also seeing that now in China, with Car News China reporting list prices for used Model Ys up to $50,000 for a standard range, which is $2,700 more US dollars than the list price from Tesla. So obviously a strong sign of demand. And then just like we talked about before, it also explains why Tesla has had to increase prices. If Tesla were to not take any action like that, eventually a lot of that additional margin is just going to end up in the hands of resellers rather than Tesla. Not 100% of it, but a larger proportion. All right, next up, we've got a new page on Tesla's US website. This is tesla.com/fleet. They kind of lay out some of the advantages for fleet and business sales, as well as a contact form. Probably overdue to some extent. I wouldn't just assume that this means that Tesla's going to start giving out fleet discounts or anything like that. But if you're ordering thousands of vehicles or something, you probably need to coordinate logistics with Tesla. This can help facilitate that. I didn't actually think this was news at first because I had remembered a page like this, but I think that was probably on the UK Tesla page. Tesla had something similar to help explain business sales there because of differences in tax credits and things like that. So not entirely new for Tesla, but new in the US. All right, next up, we've got a report on CATL, and this is coming from CNEV Post, and I think maybe it has caused a little bit of confusion. They're reporting that CATL has started construction on a new factory near Giga Shanghai. I think when you see CATL factory or CATL plant, you assume a battery factory, I don't think that's the case here. From what I can understand, this is actually more of an R&D center. So at first I was excited to see news of a new battery plant since EATL is already expanding so aggressively. I mean, we've talked about that and just wanted to clarify that for anyone else that may have gone through that same thought process on any of these articles on this today. All right, next we've got an update on Tesla Energy. Not the most exciting update here. This has to do with Moss Landing. As we know, that is a huge Tesla Energy project there in California. I believe it is 730 megawatt hours. I'm not sure if that's the final planned capacity or the current capacity, but huge project. Last weekend, fire alarms for the system went off, the operation shut down, and some batteries were damaged. I don't know exactly how much capacity was damaged. They just say 10 battery racks or 10 packs. If it was a full megapack, 10 of those would be about 30 megawatt hours. So a pretty sizable amount, but a small percentage of the overall project. And I think that would be the maximum that it would be. This is actually the second incident for this project. There was one back in September that had set off sprinklers, damaged batteries there as well. This time, less significant, and it sounds like shutdown procedures did work as they should. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but Vistra Energy, who owns the project, said that there's early evidence that water hoses leaked, causing some of the batteries to short. So not clear to me if Tesla would have any responsibility for that, and again, sounds like the damage is pretty minimal, but wanted to share that as well. All right, last few items here. First up, we've got a report on a bill being introduced in West Virginia that is seeking to ban Tesla and others from doing over-the-air updates rather than taking a vehicle in for service. Seems like one of the dumbest proposals I have heard. Hopefully that will not pass. We'll try to follow the progress on that. It is Bill HB 4560. Next then, we've got reports out of Germany that sound quite familiar. We've heard rumblings on this for quite some time. But apparently Volkswagen is trying to get more serious about plans to take Porsche public as its own entity. No firm news, but apparently Volkswagen AG and Porsche Holding have negotiated a key point agreement, which should serve as a basis for that possible IPO. So seems like things are progressing. We'll see what happens there. Lastly, then, we've got an update on Lucid. They are now dealing with their first recall. So they found a possible issue in the suspension with the front strut damper. They're not aware of any issues that this has caused so far. They expect it only affects about 1% of the vehicle population being recalled, which is probably the most interesting part of this, 203 potentially affected cars. So that's probably Lucid's total production, or probably more precisely, total deliveries up to that point in time. All right, that is it for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Wednesday, February 23rd episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.